The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 3rd, 2014, and we are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And today is Friday, obviously. If you've been paying attention to the Friday shows, we have our great guest, Brooks Kubik, on. And before I, I'm going to tell you exactly what we're going to talk about today, which is a very interesting subject and one that we get a lot of requests to talk about. And today's topic is going to be dings, dents, and workarounds, which will be a very interesting show. But before I bring Brooks in, we did a show a few weeks ago on his new book, Knife, Fork, and Muscle. And as you know, right now you can go out to his site and you can order the book, and if you'd like an autograph or something from Brooks, I'm sure he'll accommodate you. It says it right on there. But we want to really spread this, the news of his book out there, because being a big fan of his and a gentleman that's had quite an effect on me as a trainer, going back to the days of dinosaur training, there's nothing you can't get from this guy that you're going to learn a wealth of knowledge. So, go out to his site, check out, everything on there, but especially take a look at this new book, because I think this is going to be as big as dinosaur training. And I guess if you ever want to get a 1-2 punch, I would highly suggest it. And I'll be anxious myself to read the book. So Brooks, welcome to Motivation and Muscle. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be here, Eric.
Well, I'm glad to have you. So, this is a very interesting topic. I mean, we were just talking offline, and I said how we get requests about, injuries, whether they're surgical and you got to bring them back, or, you're just beat up. Well, I don't know any weightlifter. If you're out there plowing that iron and lifting stones or kegs or whatever you want to get into, we know, none of us are ever 100%, and we're always having to probably deal with something here and there. So, Brooks, what do you see the most? I mean, obviously you're getting emails from people and verbiage all over. Is that a topic, a complaint that's constantly you're getting, via email?
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like everybody who starts working out with weights is going to hurt themselves. That's not the message. Weight training, progressive resistance training of any sort, if done properly, is a very safe activity. And the injury rate in terms of an acute injury, an acute injury would be guys playing football, gets tackled or he gets blocked from the side and his knee goes out. That's an acute injury. Acute injuries are extremely rare in strength training. And they always have been. There have been statistics on this going back into the 50s, and it's just amazing at how safe strength training is as an activity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to walk over you. Go ahead.
The problem, and you need to remember that a lot of my readers are older. Mm-hmm. By older, I will charitably say 35 and up. Which is no longer a spring chicken in the world of strength training and iron sports. And a lot of my readers are in their 50s or 60s. Some of them are even older. So what I see is, as I said, not the acute injury, the sudden accident, the major trauma, although that does happen to people, not necessarily working out, but otherwise. I have one reader who was hit by a shot put.
Ooh.
Somebody threw a shot put and hit him with it on the upper back and neck and shoulder. He's actually sent me the x-rays, and guess what? He lived through it. He was fine because he was carrying a lot of muscle mass.
Yep.
Had another reader who was at a Highland Games competition. He was working as one of the judges. Let this be a lesson to you. Somebody threw a hammer and hit him with the hammer. He also was okay, and the reason he was okay was he was carrying a lot of muscle mass. Yep. I've had readers who've been in auto accidents, readers who've been hit by a car while they were either walking or running or bicycling. And a lot of guys probably are walking around, maybe even still alive, because they were in really good shape. They'd done a lot of training. They were strong. Their joints were strong. And they were able to withstand a sudden, unexpected trauma. So, I view weightlifting and progressive strength training as a huge plus for joint strength and joint integrity and injury avoidance. But what happens over time as you grow older is you start to pick up little nagging things, and that I use the term dings and dents, like the dings and dents on an old car. And it's not necessarily something that you've done or that you've done wrong. It's not necessarily that your training is bad or a particular exercise is bad or anything is bad. It's just accumulated wear and tear over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my guys who are in their 40s, well, not 40s, but in their 50s or 60s, Some of my gals too, they've been doing this for 40, 45, 50, 55, in some cases 60 or more years.
Wow.
And over a period of time, life starts to catch up to you, and you start to have nagging little aches and pains and little problems and things, and you start to find that a particular movement or a particular exercise causes more trouble than it used to be, than used to be the case, or something that never caused you problems now causes you problems. And so you have to figure out, okay, if I can no longer do, for example, bench presses,
right,
what exercise can I do to replace the bench press as a workaround? So that's where I'm coming to the issue of dings, dents, and workarounds, although, of course, anyone at any age can have dings, can have dents, and can need a workaround.
Well, you know what I find a lot with myself is, we were talking before, and you know that I do mostly everything in the rack, and it's not only because I love to do it, it's out of necessity for safety, because I don't really train with anybody too much anymore. You know, not on a regular thing, and with what I'm doing right now, Brooks, I don't. It's not going to really work with somebody unless they're kind of on the same page, and you don't see a lot of people doing that. But I know one thing. I haven't, other than when I did tear the bicep when I competed in Iceland in 08, I've been very lucky to be able to train for multiple decades and be able to do this. But I do know one thing. A lot of the stuff that's happened to me, believe it or not, is because it was all non-lifting related, other than the bicep. Like, I hurt my knee a few months ago because I didn't use my head, and I put brand-new wall-to-wall carpeting in the house, and I caught the edge of the stairs wearing socks, which, if anybody's done that, it's like being on ice skates. And I pinned the knee back behind me. And I'll tell you right now, the only thing that saved me from not destroying the knee was all the years of isometric pushes and dead stop squats and taking good care of it. Now, it's a lot better. It's clicking a little bit. As I told you, I hit 617 the other night out of the hole. It's a little sore today, and I got to go again tonight, and I'm going to repeat what I was doing, only we're going to knock the percentage down a little bit tonight. But weightlifting has been very good to me, and I know the feeling when you get these dents and these dings and you got to work around things, because when you get into a pattern of doing things, and I mean a successful pattern, you know, for years you did the deadlift or the dead stop stuff, and you were very, very successful with it. And you got to become I think as you get older too, I think you got to become a much smarter lifter. A lot of times when we're younger and very exuberant and hungry, we can kind of get away with form to a point. Now, in a power rack, we know if you're coming out of the chute and you come off one side, you might come up, but it's going to knock you right on your can. And I think it's good because it could save you from blowing your knees right out of you or something worse. But as you age a little bit, you know, you might not be as fast as you once were out of the chute. And maybe your hunger isn't as tight. And it's like, you know, it's like the old lion who tries, but he just kind of lost a step there. And that youngin' that's been waiting to take his girls there is waiting the wings and he gets you. So I think more than ever, a lot of us are kind of fighting time in some ways, you know, still hungry, still more than adequate, still super strong and muscular, but maybe we just lost an inch there. Would you agree with that?
Well, I definitely would, and that's part of the effect of age on the human body. And, you know, that really ties into the whole dings and dents discussion, because part of avoiding or minimizing or dealing with dings and dents, it is something that's very unpopular. And that something is recognize that you are actually older than you used to be 20 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, yeah. You know, the whole popular culture, the whole message is try to stay young forever. You know, and, you know, 40 was the new 30, and now 60 is the new 40. And, you know, the baby boomers want to be young forever. And, you know, they sell products, they sell drugs, they sell cosmetic surgery, they sell virtually everything to keep people young. Mm-hmm. And that's fine in the sense of, yeah, you want to do everything you can diet-wise, nutrition-wise, eating-wise, training-wise, exercising-wise, living the right kind of lifestyle, as we've discussed before. You know, you want to do everything you can to stay young, and that's great, but you can be a whole lot younger than everyone around you who is not watching what they eat, eating junk, not training. Mm-hmm. But you're still going to be older than you used to be. It, you know, it's you versus you. And, you know, I've got, it's kind of an interesting thing. I look back to when I was a high school wrestler. I was a state wrestling champion in Greco-Roman wrestling. I was a very extremely good athlete. I was probably, you know, if you take that in my competition record, I was probably in the top one-half of 1% of all high school wrestlers in the entire United States. You know, so that's really good.
Yep.
There were things that I could do then that I would not even dream of doing now. You know, there were certain wrestling moves like a back suplex. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was able to do a back suplex in freestyle or Greco-Roman wrestling on an opponent who was trying to resist the move. And, you know, that's the one where you're standing behind your opponent or yep. Your opponent's on his hands and knees. He stands up. You're behind him. You get him around the waist, lift him up, and you go back,
yep.
Lifting him up and over behind you as you drop into a full bridge with his weight coming down and hitting the mat right before you land in that bridge position. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know how to do it, you'll break your neck.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, this is something where it's an incredibly difficult and frankly dangerous move. And something that you really have to practice and really have to train for. Well, you know, I could do that when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I would not try to do that now, and I would not even try to go into the training that's necessary for doing that Although, if I do neck bridges, I can work up to heavy weights in the neck bridges over time, and that's a heck of a lot more than most people my age can do or would even try to do. So, you know, we're all different, but we all have to compete with younger versions of ourselves. Now, right. The other thing in my personal case is that one of my personal little goals in life is to try to outlift that wrestling champion that I used to be for as long as I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and not only that wrestling champion, but the same person a few years later. So basically what I try to do as I approach 60 is to try to stay ahead of where I was when I was 18, 19, 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal little thing. And, you know, I always figure if I can stay better than the snot-nosed little kid that I used to be.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, if I can stay better than the wrestling champion that I once was,
yeah.
You know, that's a good thing. Even if at age 60, I'm not able to lift as much in, say, the squat or the bench press as I could when I was 30 or 35. You know, you pick your battles.
Well, yeah, definitely.
But the point is, you have to recognize that you are getting old, because if you don't, I guarantee you will do something stupid. It'll be the weekend warrior syndrome.
Yep.
And you'll hurt yourself, and probably at that point it's game over.
I would tend to agree with you wholeheartedly there. But I've got a couple questions for you that I've always wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Okay. So we're going to kind of do a little chronological evolution of you right here, if you don't mind. You know, I followed you for years, obviously, and you went more into the body weight stuff for quite a while. And then you followed up with, you know, I know you're doing Olympic lifting now. I don't know what else you do. At the time you started doing the body weight and you moved into the Olympic stuff, Brooks, did you feel that was a natural evolution? Okay, we're talking about dings and dents and stuff. Had you gotten to that point where you knew, or was it just a choice that I want to try something different? And I know you've done this stuff before, but you were definitely concentrating and you put some material out about the body weight stuff. I mean, because you see the shots of your back. I mean, it's phenomenal, the thickness. And I know that's from weightlifting too. I'm fully aware of that. But was that the evolution, or did you felt you were kind of, I got to do this now to be here today, you and I talking? I mean, is this a result of that right now? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Okay.
I think the important progression for people to understand is this. First of all, most of us over time have something that happens that gives us a weak spot or a weak joint or a weak limb. And by weak, I don't mean physically weak, but I mean something where there's a bit of a joint integrity issue and you have to be careful of it. And basically, once that happens, it lasts for your whole life. In my case, I finished the end of my senior year of high school wrestling with a very badly injured shoulder that would sort of slide out of joint, partially pop out or dislocate during matches.
Ooh.
And it actually, in one of the toughest matches I ever had, to qualify for the Ohio State Wrestling Championships to end my career, I was in a match against a really good kid, shot in on him for a single leg. He countered by blocking, knocked the shoulder into this position where basically it was, I couldn't use it. And and that happened in the first 15 or 20 seconds of the match. I had to wrestle the entire 6-minute match, basically one arm. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the match, he was in the top position. He was riding me. He was ahead by 4 points. Yeah, obviously it was very difficult wrestling one-armed. And using something called leg wrestling or a grapevine, I was actually able to reverse him, roll him onto his own back, hold him down in what's called a Turk's ride, where you basically hold the guy's legs with your legs so he can't move, and then you headlock him. I couldn't headlock him, so I had like just put my shoulder against him, the bad shoulder, and just try to hold him down like that. And I actually was able to do that as the match came to an end, and so I got a reversal and a near fall for 3 points, and I won the match by 1 point and went into the state wrestling championships in Ohio, where I finished bad shoulder and all. I finished in third place.
Wow. Yep.
Now, the problem was that it took about 2 years for my shoulder to heal. And the shoulder has always been the sore point ever since. And one of the reasons that I started doing a lot of really heavy bench pressing after that was that I read an article in Strength and Health magazine where they noted that Olympic weightlifters who did too much bench pressing found that the bench press tightened their shoulders and they were not as good at the snatch movement, which requires extremely flexible shoulders. And so the article said, if you're concentrating on Olympic weightlifting, you might want to not do bench presses. So I thought, well, you know, okay, my problem is my shoulder slips out of joint all the time, which sounds to me like it's not too tight, it's too loose. So maybe if I start doing more bench pressing, that will be a good thing. During my high school years before that, I'd primarily done weighted dips as an upper body pushing exercise. And so I really started to specialize in heavy bench pressing for pretty much the first time in my 20s. That worked really well. And, you know, along with other things that we've discussed in other shows, changes to my diet and changes to my training program, a lot of power rack training, heavy partials in the power rack, that sort of thing. I really got my bench press up there and was able to compete in bench press championships and powerlifting competitions. Did very, very well in that. And then in my mid-30s, I started to have a little bit of a problem in my right shoulder, which was the shoulder that I had hurt in high school.
Right.
I remember in powerlifting competition, I was talking to a guy that was a national bench press champion and record holder in the bench press, drug-free competition. He was a year or two older than I was, and he told me that out of the blue, at about age 35, 36, he had developed a feeling in his right shoulder that felt like grated glass in the joint. And it just caused excruciating pain when he would lift, whether he was in competition or training. Nothing that he tried seemed to help. And his competition best dropped from about 450, 455 to 410 or so in 1 year. And it was the result of that problem with his joint. And he was saying to me, you know, if you ever start having this problem, you know, be aware of it because it's just going to get worse.
Yep.
Well, a couple years later, I think it was about age 37, that right shoulder, when I would do benches, started to have that same feeling of broken glass in the joint. And there was a lot of grating and, you know, I don't know if it was bone spurring or what, but it really hurt and it really caused problems. So at that point I said, okay, I can continue doing the bench press, which has been a good friend for a long time, or I can do what is probably the smarter thing and move on to something else. So at that point in time, it was very easy to make a decision. You know, I said, I've done a lot of bench press and powerlifting competitions. I've won 5 national bench press championships and drug test competition, set a lot of records, had a lot of fun, met a lot of great people. But it's okay to move on. So what I then did was start to do, focus a lot more on overhead lifting, doing a lot of military press, standing press, clean and press. I started to become more interested in Olympic weightlifting. And I also, at that point, started collecting a lot of old magazines. And as I was collecting the old magazines, obviously, back in the days, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, Olympic weightlifting was the king.
Yep, yep.
And reading about that in the old magazines got me very interested in doing more Olympic weightlifting work. So started moving in that direction and was doing that, no coach, just self-taught, which in retrospect was probably a mistake. And eventually in my early to mid 40s, I think around age 44, 45, started to develop some nagging problems. You know, that shoulder was still a problem.
Sure, sure.
Had some back issues, tried moving back to more of a powerlifting type thing. That was hard on the back. And finally, in great frustration, I said, you know, maybe it's time to try something completely different. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I moved into the body weight realm. Mm-hmm. And body weight training that I did, which is detailed in the book, Dinosaur Body Weight Training, it is not your typical body weight training. It's not high rep body weight training. It's low rep, difficult, demanding exercises, very challenging things. And to some degree, it's almost like gymnastics training.
Yep, yep.
With sets and reps. And that's the way a lot of old school people who did bodyweight training would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what, you know, that's what I taught myself and what I teach in Dinosaur Bodyweight Training.
Mm-hmm.
That was extremely effective. And probably I was more muscular and more massively built at that point in my career than at any earlier point in my career.
Well, not to interrupt you, but I'll tell you what, I think that was the biggest I have ever seen you, and it was very impressive. And I know you got more to say, but there's one thing I want to just follow it up quick, because we are talking about diet and, you know, with the book on its way. Were you pretty much, I'm sure that's over 10 years ago, but had you been on the right track with your diet at that point, Brooks? Were you into the grass fed? Were you doing? Was everything evolving with you? Put it that way. Obviously, we all evolve. I'm evolving right now, talking to you. You know, we've gone over the decades you've trained. Now you're doing body weight. You're not doing a conventional, because anything I've ever read with body weight, everybody's got to be doing hundreds and hundreds of reps, which I don't really agree with that. If you want to stagger stuff now, but I like, you know, with what you're doing more of a, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's more of like a weightlifting style of body weight training, which I think for someone that's never done that, I think that would be more beneficial, because as we know, if you punch somebody in the nose the first time you meet them, chances are we're not coming back again, other than if we're going to come back and take you on for a second time. So Had that whole evolution of Brooks Cubic been happening now with the diet and everything even back then?
Well, in answer to the evolution of the diet was an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the word evolution is you know, really perfect to describe it. And I had transitioned away from conventional meat with antibiotics and hormones. And I was eating hormone-free, antibiotic-free, chemical-free beef, really from like my late 20s. Coincidentally, as we mentioned on one of the earlier shows, at exactly the point in time where I made some really tremendous gains in strength and power, lifting ability, and muscle mass. That process continued. I got divorced, lived a single life for a couple of years, and then met Trudy. Trudy and I got married, and she really helped me with the diet and nutritional side of things. And we, you know, at that point, the diet started to improve a lot. It was still not not where it needed to be, but remember, there's a difference in your body in your mid-40s versus your late 50s. And it's much more important now as an older trainee to really insist on having the diet be completely perfect. So, you know, it's been getting better and better and better. It was better in my 40s than it was in my 30s. Today it is better than it was in my 40s. So anyhow, and the other point I wanted to mention was you referred to the dinosaur bodyweight training as a weightlifting style of bodyweight training. And and that's exactly right. I mean, the typical bodyweight training program is based on increasing the number of reps.
Right.
And what I did was say, try something difficult and challenging that you can only do for a relatively low number of reps. For example, maybe only 5 or 6. When you can do that, add another set. When you can do that, add another set. And after you're doing 5 sets of 5, 5 sets of 6, maybe even working up to 8 sets of 5 or 10 sets of 5, then move on to a more challenging exercise.
Right.
So, you know, I had, you know, pull-up variations that, you know, ran the gamut from regular pull-ups to thick bar pull-ups to pull-ups hanging from vertical ropes, the double rope pull-up, which is extremely difficult pull-up, pull-ups with staggered grips where one hand is high and one hand is low, which is very close to a one-arm pull-up. You know, and, you know, doing those for sets of 5 or 6 reps and doing many sets of them got results pretty quickly. So that was the body weight thing. So I was playing around with the body weight thing. And one thing that I was doing was learning how to do a one-arm handstand, an unsupported, a foot-supported handstand, not a free balance. I was never able to do that. But a one-arm handstand, feet positioned against the wall so you don't tip over, and you've got all of your weight on one arm and one shoulder. And I was doing that as an isometric hold, you know, just working on the shoulder strength, the upper back strength, and the tricep strength. So that got too easy. And I needed a way to make it harder. So I thought, okay, simple way to do this. I'll bring weights back into the picture. So I would do a one-arm handstand. And with the other arm, the arm that was just going along for the ride, if you will, I'd pick up a dumbbell and just pull it up to my shoulder. Okay, so now you're supporting your own body weight plus the weight of the
dumbbell. A dumbbell,
And that. I got up to where I was doing a I was using a 70-pound dumbbell.
Whoa.
one of those old York cannonball dumbbells. So this looked pretty cool. And
well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and I was 49, just about 50 when I was doing that. And one morning, I woke up. I imagine I probably slept on my arm funny or something. Mm-hmm. But my shoulder was so stiff and tight that I basically, again, with that right shoulder, the one that had been a problem,
been injured. Long, yep.
I couldn't raise my arm to comb my hair.
Ugh.
I mean, it's like, what is going on? So basically, it was a frozen shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
We made an appointment with one of the top orthopedic surgeons in town to get it checked out. He did a full battery of tests. He decided that he couldn't see any problem, but very cheerfully suggested that we schedule surgery right away, and he would go in and see if he found anything. And I remember him saying, at your age, I'm sure there's a lot of arthritic spurring, and I'm sure there's stuff we can find once we cut you open.
Yeah, we can find.
Yeah. And that was absolutely hilarious in retrospect. In part because he had a young medical student with him who was really gung-ho, very much of a gung-ho yuppie type.
Yep.
Who was, there to watch how the surgeon did it. And Trudy was there with me. Trudy, of course, has a lifetime background in physical therapy.
Yep.
And she was arguing that, really a cortisone shot and, of course, physical therapy was all I needed. And she and the medical student got into it. And I remember him telling her that she would have to learn that there were times when alternative modalities were not sufficient.
Uh-huh.
And mind you, he was significantly younger than she was, and she'd been doing this kind of thing since probably before he was born.
Mm-hmm.
She almost decked him right there. I mean, it was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. I wish that we had filmed that. It would have been great on YouTube. don't bother yourself, little lady. This is for men to discuss. And I mean, she just bang. She was ready to deck him.
So, that's good, though.
Yeah. Oh, it was hilarious. So, needless to say, we did not have the let me cut you open and see what I can find once you're cut open surgery.
I think that was a wise move too.
Yeah. And we rehabbed the thing with active release trigger point therapy with a chiropractor that Trudy knew, someone who's really good at that.
Yep.
And did a lot of extremely, extremely lightweight exercises for my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
I was using like 2.5 pounds, 5 pounds for resistance, doing every kind of lateral raise or shoulder extension ever invented. And dozens that were never invented. I mean, I came up with this incredible list where I was moving the shoulder in every possible direction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back then, I did not have a pair of Indian clubs.
Right.
I do now.
Yep.
Those would have been a good tool. But instead, I just used either a 2.5 pound plate or a 5 pound plate.
Mm-hmm.
And for a period of about 3 or 4 months, I just did hundreds of reps every day to move the joint, to get some blood flowing, but primarily just to move it, because that's what you need to do.
Right.
And got to the point where things were starting to get better. I was getting stronger. And so I started increasing the weight. And eventually I was at the point where I was doing, as part of what I considered rehab, a lot of lateral raises with 30, 35, 40, 45 pound dumbbells, and really feeling a lot stronger. But most importantly, after a number of years of body weight only work, I discovered that I really, really missed holding weights in my hands.
Without a doubt.
And just doing this light stuff to rehab the shoulders, just doing lateral raises and curls and incline presses and various things for the shoulder and the arms, just doing that made me think, I really missed the weights. So once my shoulder was strong enough to take it, I went back to regular barbell and dumbbell training. Trap bar deadlifts, front squats, push presses, dumbbell presses, things like that. And after enough of that where I was feeling really, really good, I said, you know, I think what I want to do is try that Olympic lifting stuff again, because that was always fun. And that was the point in my early 50s where I went back to the Olympic lifting. And amazingly, given my history of shoulder problems and given that frozen shoulder, amazingly, I was able to do Olympic weightlifting, cleans, clean and jerk, snatches. And now, age 57, I still am. And my workouts are 100% Olympic weightlifting oriented, and that's my focus and my interest and my challenge for myself. And one of the reasons that I do it is that I like doing it.
Yeah.
It's just downright fun. And you know, my theory about that is a lot of people probably enjoy doing other things. That's perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with that. But just as I don't have a problem with what someone else is doing, don't have a problem with what I'm doing. And understand, I'm 57. I've been doing this since I was 11 years old. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. It's my garage, my weights, my lifting platform. And you know what? I can do whatever I want to do when I train.
Yep. And yet, not only that, you don't have to go to a club. You don't have to go at a certain time. You can set up your own schedule. You know, you don't have to have somebody tell you you can't use chalk. You don't have to look at all the morons, basically, around you that, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before with some other people, and it was like, who could go into a gym, think about this, they're running a treadmill and watching TV? I mean, you know, or on the door it's got a big sign plastered, we have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Well, if I want Wi-Fi, I'll stay the hell home and do it. But I don't even – that tangent I'm not even going to get off on, Tay, because I'm like in the mood to tear a hole through that stuff right now. But here's the next thing, Brooks, because we always get into the mental aspects, because you and I like to really – dig into this stuff. And we had a show last night where we were talking about, you know, where do you want to be 20 years down the road? And this is going to, this, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we don't talk about anything. We just seem to do pretty well with each other back and forth. And that's what I like about this show. We got to talk about the mental aspect, though, of the older lifter. And let me just explain my point, and then I know you're going to come back at me with something good. But I want to tell you from my perspective, all right? You know me. I'm a big fan of the old guys anyways, and I admire Grimmick because, to me, I want to be in my 80s and still be able to do something, you know, or Carl Norberg. You know, you think about guys like that. The problem I have, and maybe it will change as I get older, but I don't know. I guess I'm type A anyways, like a lot of us, because we're all driven. And if you look at us personally, we're all pretty damn successful in whatever we achieve. And we're people that are usually very committed. And in my case, I'm a very loyal guy, probably sometimes too much because I've gotten burned multiple times. But that's the way I am. I like people, and I like putting in and getting out from them the same thing. Doesn't always work, but that's okay because you always attract the winners like that. But my problem is this, and I don't know if – and I know you've had to face this, but I can't speak for you here. I have a hard time listening to people. I've heard some people say, well, you got to change. Now, I understand change as in respect to what you and I have been talking about. All right. Well, maybe I can't dead stop anymore, or maybe I don't want to anymore. Okay. Maybe I want to go to a conventional front squat, ass to the ground, you know, feel that Olympic bar bend a little bit on me and those bumpers just flying up off me practically. But the thing that I'm going to struggle with, and I know this, is mentally I'm pretty charged all the time because I like to be that way. I'm hungry. I don't feel I've let up a hell of a lot in the last 20 years. In fact, I think I'm better now, even though I've had a few things, as we're talking about dings and dents, while I've had a tear, which was a very hard thing for me to face. I mean, now I look at it as it's a permanent scar from Iceland. I can take that with me. I guess that's kind of like a badge, and I'm all with it. But the thing that I contemplate at times, and I don't like to think about it, but I got it down the road, is this. How the hell am I ever going to take this energy and put it into something else that I'm going to like as much as this? And that's something that has always, I don't know if I want to say scare you, but it's puzzles me. And I realize there's going to be other things I want to do. You know, I'm getting into this bending stuff now. Mm-hmm. And I love the old timers where they, you know, wrap chains around their chest. They knew how to breathe and snap chains. I think that might be the next evolution here of me after Iceland and hopefully Scotland and wherever else I'm going to go in the next 2 to 3 years. As I figure after that, I'm going to be pretty beaten to the ground. And I hope to still be doing a lot of this stuff. But I'm thinking what I just said, nails, horseshoes, et cetera, because if I had my way, I'd have a little shop right now where I'd be beating iron against an anvil. So even though I change, I always seem to I can't do anything conventional, Brooks. I've got to be extreme. And I think a lot of us are extreme like that. And to me, if I was pounding iron on an anvil and breaking things and snapping things, I think I'd still feel as good as I do today with dead stop rack work, lifting stones, you know, running for the glory, man. You know, so explain to me, you know, obviously I'm sure you probably faced a lot of what I'm talking about. And I think this is good to bring up for the listeners because a lot of us are just kind of wandering around and thinking, what the hell am I going to do now? So what would you say to what I mean, I've gone on a little bit long winded, but I had to do it that way. That's just the way it is. So what do you think?
Well, that was an interesting an interesting question.
It's a very deep question.
Yeah, well, it's a much deeper question than most people understand. There are several things that seem to happen as one grows older. And I think I can speak to that as someone who's 57, who's been doing this since age 11.
Yep.
And doing it with a passion at very high levels of performance and, you know, in ways that obviously meant totally engaged and committed and wrapped around the lifting. One thing that happens is that if you work and work and work and achieve something special, sometimes at that point you can say, I've done it. I don't need to do it again. I can move on to something else. And in essence, walk away and you're perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. And I remember very distinctly my fifth national bench press championship. The contest went absolutely perfectly for me. You know, it was one of those days where everything was completely perfect. And I remember thinking at the end of that day that I was never going to be able to have a better day of living, that was physically, mentally, emotionally, all the way around, that was the pinnacle. And I never entered another championship, in part because I didn't need to. I had gone so deep and had such a satisfying experience that there was no need to try to do it again. So that's part of it. Another thing that happens, another part of it, in a different sense, can be some people who achieve very great success when they're young don't want to compete anymore because it makes them feel bad to think that their performance gradually diminishes over time. And they want people to remember the way they were rather than the way they are. And so, for example, it's rare to have an Olympic gold medal winner continue into masters level competition. And I think that's primarily because if you're the best in the world at something, it's very difficult to continue to compete and be less than the best in the world. So, you know, that makes it difficult for some people to compete. But what happens, and you see this in people who are competitive masters level athletes in a variety of sports, most people who continue to compete at the masters level were not necessarily the Olympic or the world champions when they were younger. They were people perhaps who were competitive athletes, competitive lifters.
Sure.
But they were never the best in the world. And they may not have ever had that moment of absolute satisfaction from competition. And they may be chasing that. And if you're chasing that when you're in your 50s or your 60s or even your 70s, that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, that happens, and this has happened in my case, and I've shared this with others my age and older, and this seems to be kind of a consistent response. Even if you are not lifting as much or doing the same things that you did when you were younger, even if you are making adjustments to Father Time, you're still training, and your training is actually more fun than ever before. You get more sheer joy out of your training than at any time previously. And, you know, if you go on YouTube and you watch a masters level Olympic weightlifting competition, you know, look at the lifters in their 60s or 70s. The thing that is striking is you see so many smiles.
Yeah.
They are happy to be doing this, particularly because most people their age, you know, are using walkers just to go from the kitchen to the living room.
Without a doubt.
And so what happens is you may not be driven to handle enormous, prodigious amounts of weight. You may not be driven to lift the stone. You may not be driven to bend or break iron. It doesn't matter. The point is, you are still training, and you absolutely love your training. Have we talked about Grimmick's training, where he ended up?
No, we didn't. We've skimmed John, but no. What do you get like to what you mean? As he aged, you know, got into his 70s and 80s. You mean, Brooks?
Yeah.
No. Go ahead. That'd be very interesting.
Well, John Grimmick started out as a young man training at home,
mm-hmm.
using a barbell that his brother bought that he wasn't supposed to use because he was very short. And his mm-hmm. parents were afraid that he would stunt his growth.
Of course.
You know?
And, yeah. No. This is great. Go. This is fantastic to hear.
So, you know, the story was that John's brother got the barbell and John got the muscles. Because what happened was his older brother, the family lived in Perth Amboy, New Jersey.
Yep.
His older brother got a job as a lumberjack. Left town to go work at this lumber camp, locked up the barbell set so that little brother John couldn't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, little brothers can get to anything.
Sure they can.
So John started training, and he had a job working at a soda fountain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a drugstore soda fountain.
Sure.
And he would work from, I think it was afternoon until midnight. And so he'd get home at midnight. Everyone else was asleep. And he would work out after midnight in the mm-hmm. backyard. Take the weights out of the wooden box they were in,
yep.
work out, put them back, and then he'd go upstairs and go to sleep around 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
In the wintertime, he'd do the same thing, except he worked out in the attic.
Yep.
So that was his start. And, you know, look what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty remarkable. So
yep.
then he goes on. He's the best built man and one of the strongest men of his generation, an Iron Game legend. He's living in York, member of the York Barbell Club, training in the York Barbell Club gym, the most famous gymnasium in the world at that point in time. That's where he's training. That's where he stays. Retires. And now he needs a new place to train.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't like going to the gyms because all that happens is people come up and they start talking to him, asking him questions. Mr. Grimmick, how do I build big arms? Mr. Grimmick, how do I do this? Mr. Grimmick, you know, please tell me. You know, he
yeah.
just hated that because it happened all the time. So he ends up training in his basement.
Mm-hmm.
And he has an old set of freestanding York squat stands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a power rack, but the old freestanding squat
yep.
stands. And a barbell that's one of those exercise bars, not an Olympic bar, but, you know, an old
mm-hmm.
5-foot barbell.
1-inch.
Yep. 1-inch diameter barbell set that took the cast iron plates with the 1-inch diameter hole.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a mixture of plates that he scrammed from here and there, including York plates and Weider plates. And if anyone who's listening is familiar with the York-Weider Wars of the 40s and 50s and 60s, the
mm-hmm.
idea that John Grimmick, the icon of York, was trained with a barbell that used York and Weider plates interchangeably is just absolutely hilarious. So, anyhow, that's where he ended up. And he had as much fun training in his basement.
Yep.
All by himself in peace and quiet and solitude.
Mm-hmm.
As he had during his whole training career, being the most famous man in the Iron Game, training in the most famous gym in the Iron Game.
Yeah. And go ahead. Go ahead.
And I was just going to say that, you know, that's an example of how the sheer pleasure of exercising not only stays with you, but actually get stronger and stronger over time. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, it's a part of you forever, and all the other things just kind of fall by the wayside.
And you nailed that right on the head, because I'm going to use four letters. It's called love. Well, and it is. You and I both know, and I'm going to equate this to weights and stones. There's a certain – look, it. If you understand what we're really talking about, this physical culture here today, and with Brooks just talking about John Grimmick, I'll tell you from my point, and we'll see how we follow up together on this. I love weightlifting. Someone would say, well, how could you compare loving weights or loving stones to loving an individual? You know, you could talk about Trudy. I could talk about any girlfriend. But you have to love it. And by this, I mean it is a romance. When I go out there, I have to love what I'm doing. And I have to love to stick that bar on, you know, across my traps, whether it's 30 below out in that garage or 105 with, you know, 70% humidity dripping off me. And by this, I mean to continue to an 80-year-old man, say like John Grimmick or Al Montini, an all-around lifter who's in his late 80s now and still chugging right along. You have to have a love for it, and I think it's a deep love. It's a love as great as almost any individual I've ever been around or been with. And as wild as this might sound, the weights have never failed me in respect to, I guess, and that's up to my responsibility of, I try to see him through. Of course, like anybody, I've been flattened by a number of things with the weights. But that's how it is, because nothing is ever that easy, and anything that's worthwhile, and I know everybody's heard this, but you need to hear it. You need to go after it again and again and again until you get it. Unless it's hurting you, then you got to be smart enough to say enough, okay? But it's like when I went to Iceland, a number of people are like, well, why? You know, why do you want to do that? You know, what is that going to be? What's that going to make you? And, you know, and the same stuff, Brooks, you could fail, you could get hurt. Well, yeah, I did get hurt. So what? I took the chance of going from Albany, New York, flying on a plane to Iceland, country I've never been to, and took a shot at something. And I'm proud in respect of this. And this isn't to say, ha ha, I'm better than you are. But at least I had the balls to lay myself out on the line and take no matter what happened and give whatever I could and come back and, regardless what happened, hold my head up high. But there had to be a romance with that stone with me too, because it was Steve Jeck that really turned me on, and he's the one who really set the course for all of us who's ever gone over there since, I think it was around 2003 or 4, he put out that DVD. And when I saw him doing that, it was just like when we talk about with you with the power rack training and me. A light bulb went off and said, you know what? You need to go do this. You need to go try this. And you know what? You love stuff so much that I think you can do it. And that's what I'm talking about, the romance. You know, you have a love-hate almost for it, because I don't care who you are, and anybody that tells me different is not telling me the truth. There's times I've gone out there and things have gone horribly bad, where I've literally, like, yelled at myself to the point where it was like, I wouldn't even repeat some of the stuff I've said to myself verbally, because I was so upset, and I'd be like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I said, why? Why am I doing this? I'm beating the snot out of everything on me. For what? And then I can tell you this, I'd walk in the house, and 10 minutes later, it was like I'd be ready to go again. And that's what I'm talking about, L-O-V-E. When you love something that much, and this is what you and I talked about a little while ago with loyalty with people, this is all brought on by weightlifting, your achievement, your tenacity, your commitment, you know, go after things, growth. Yes, and this is what you and I, this is why you and I converge so well on subject matter is this. We have these beliefs. Maybe we have differences, obviously, in some things. That's not a big deal. But we know the bottom line is this, that our love for this stuff is so deep, we are trying to teach people this philosophy. You're not going to get this out of a Muscle and Fitness or any of the stuff that's running around today, and you surely aren't going to hear the truth from a lot of people out there. And I'm not going to get on that end because this is what I believe. So, Brooks, I know I went on for a little while, but that you tell me. I mean, do you feel that way? I mean, do you feel like a romance with things? I mean, I know it's different with flesh and blood, but it isn't, because how can you not have deep feelings for what we do and do this stuff for decades? That's the things I like exploring within myself. To see what do you got, man, and what do you got to give to somebody else that maybe would become important in your life, and does this person return the same stuff back to you? Do I sound like I'm off the beam or or what?
No, not at all. Bob Hoffman wrote a great book called Weightlifting back in the 30s, and he opens it up by saying, I am a weightlifter. I love weightlifters and weightlifting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the word love is what, the fifth or sixth or seventh word in that book?
Yep.
You know, and it's not just an accidental word, it's an important word.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, you have George F. Jowett writing some little articles that he called The Romance of Strength.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people who've been doing this forever, the men and women who started the Iron Game and started physical culture and got it going and kept it going, they really had a passion for what they were doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I have found in my own life and what many have found. And what I'm saying from the perspective of an older person who's been doing this for a long, long time is that passion stays.
Mm-hmm.
It remains. It don't go away. It don't diminish. It mm-hmm. stays strong. And that's one of the things that, you know, that I am trying to bring to people and share with people. That's what I'd like everybody to have, is a passion for true physical culture, old time, old school physical culture, hard nosed, no nonsense, real world training, not for anyone else, but for themselves.
Yep.
Because they love it. And I'd love to see that passion last not just a couple of weeks or a couple of months or until a contest or until this or until that, but for someone's entire life.
Amen. Without a doubt. You can't really top any of that now. And one last thing I'll say, for anybody that has ever done this, for whether it's a few years, a few decades, I dare you to tell me this doesn't affect your personal life, because I truly believe when you're successful at something as physical and as mental as weightlifting, physical culture, there's no way you're going to fail outside. Now, are you going to have problems, maybe some delays, maybe get some sand kicked in your face now and then out there? You might, and you will, but you're never going to quit. And that's the thing. You know, it's like that pit bull mentality. You grab hold and you don't let go. And everybody that wants to be weak and conventional, let them. Don't be afraid to stand out from the pack. Don't be afraid to lead. We need leaders right now, and we need them big time. And remember, there's a lot of young kids coming up behind all of us, and I mean very young, that need this type of discipline, and they need this type of note, you know, being spoken to them in a consistent fashion. So, Brooks, We hit a grand slam again.
It was a pretty good one. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Before we sign off, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think I can top what we did for the closer. So I'll just say to everyone listening, you know, from me, thank you very much. Really appreciate your listening and your support. And, you know, we'll be back and doing it again soon.
Yep. And don't forget to go out to Brooks's website, brookscubic.com, and check out all the fine, you know, literature and material out there. And obviously, take a peek at his brand new book. Like I said, I think the bookends in your bookcase would be great to have Dinosaur Files. And obviously, we want his new book that is going to, you know, is going to take care of hopefully any type of eating questions that you're going to have. So take a look at Knife, Fork, and Muscle. This is Motivation and Muscle, and we are brought to you by Fiorello Barbell Company, which is www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We're on Stitcher and iTunes. Facebook is Fiorello Barbell. Twitter is Fiorello Eric. You can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. Check out Monday. The Motivation Muscle site is going to be finally finished up, and it looks magnificent. Thank you to Eric. And all I can say is another great show. Brooks, thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Eric.
Okay. You're welcome, and I'll talk.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.